chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
I'm Kim Grinnells of Dogman.com with Chris Fetters. Another practice in today on a Friday out. Practice actually today inside Husky Stadium, not on the East Field. Weather kind of a little bit overcast. Temperature probably in the high 50s. And for those planning on coming to practice on Saturday, gear up. 80% chance of rain. And when it rains next to the lake and the wind kicks up a little bit, it can get cold pretty fast. So make sure if you're coming to practice on Saturday that you do actually gear up. But, you know, kind of a shorter practice today with looks like almost entirely focused on the two-minute drill today, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, this is very similar to what they did a week ago. You know, this was a non-full pads practice. It was just, you know, pads and shorts, basically gearing up and getting prepared for a bigger scrimmage on Saturday, which is what they did last week. So today's practice was probably, 90 minutes, like they did last week, and it really honed in on a ton of two-minute situational drills, almost always starting from the offense's 40, going toward the, you know, defense's goal line. Some situations they just had to get in position to try to kick a field goal. Sometimes they were down 7, they had to try to score a touchdown. So there was a ton of situational work. Jimmy, this is the stuff that Jimmy Lake says he loves. And there were certainly a lot of fireworks today, even though it was not a full pads practice. It was fun to watch. And it just seems like when these situations come, Kim, especially in the 2 minute, when the clock is ticking and they know that they have to really just go, this is when the competition gets really bumped up a couple notches. And you can see who's coming in prepared and who's struggling quite a bit.
They don't leave any details out. They were even practicing spiking the football.
Oh, no, for sure. They were spiking everything. They were spiking getting the ball and having the receivers, you know, take a knee really quick. If they, you know, if they were past the first down marker and they needed to, you know, they needed to keep clock, they were getting down on their knees. They were doing whatever they could to stop the clock. And
you mean like what the Wazoo receivers did in the Apple Cup when they didn't need to?
I don't remember that, but I'm sure that happened at some point. But like I said, this was a situation where we're not going to be talking about the running backs hardly at all today, just because this is always, when you're in 2 minute, it's almost always throwing. So you're not, again, you're not getting much with the offensive defensive lines. You know, there and with the rap tempo or the thud tempo that they were going with, you know, with a no full pads, you're not going live at all during today. So this was all about trying to get, you know, get down the field fast. Find players quickly, hopefully down the field if you can take a shot or two. And, you know, I think a couple of quarterbacks did a nice job of that. A couple of receivers did a nice job of that. There was one in particular I know we'll talk about here today. But overall, I thought the defense still carried the day. And this is because these two-minute situations are geared towards, you know, trying to get the offense to overperform. Because usually in these situations, these are last gasp situations. I mean, when you have to go 60 yards to score a touchdown, you only have a minute to do it, you know, you're under the gun. And the pressure is all on the offense to get this done.
Well, there again, you know, offense is trying to accomplish that, but the defense is also trying to accomplish, you know, stopping them from doing that. And we saw a lot of the two high safeties, the two deep safeties, and it seems like the only thing that was open was underneath, and anything other than those underneath routes became a little treacherous for all of the quarterbacks.
Right, and again, being two-minute drill, you know, they didn't have a full 2 minutes. I mean, I think the most that I saw in any period that they did, and again, what was interesting about this too, Kim, is that they not only did the live or the stuff during the 11-on-11 team sessions, but they also tried to do some situational stuff during their 7-on-7s. So even without the lines, they were trying to move the ball, trying to get down the field, trying to do some different things. And you would have thought in the 7-on-7 situations, the offense would have had a little bit more of an upper hand because they're not dealing with a rush. But they are still dealing with the clocks and things like that. And you could tell how those things are things they clearly have to work out this spring, because there's situations that, you know, when you're not working on them all the time, and then all of a sudden you're being asked to go 60 yards in 55 or 65 seconds, it can be really stressful on you mentally in terms of trying to get all this stuff down. You also have to remember too, Kim, that two of the quarterbacks that are running these things, the scholarship guys, are new guys to this whole way of life. Now, Patrick O'Brien, he's not necessarily, because he's done this many times at other schools, but for Sam Heward, I mean, this is really fish out of water stuff for him.
When you take a look at what's going on in the quarterback battle, I kind of equate it to, you know, with Dylan Moore starting games last year. Right now, he's the champion, and if you're going to defeat the champion and grab the title, you got to defeat the champion. But I don't think if Dylan wasn't here last year and this was just a real open quarterback competition, it was really open without Dylan being the leader, you know, to start the year. Boy, I think it's just a really close competition right now.
I think it is a close competition between him and O'Brien. But you also have to remember, too, that when the Bullets were really flying last year and they had some moments like the Utah game, the final drive against Utah, for instance, and some of the things that he was able to do under the gun with the clock ticking down, he was able to execute at a high level against a very good defense. That's going to earn him a lot of grace with this offense, because he's shown he can do it. He didn't necessarily do it today. He was only able to get one field goal that I remember in any of the situational periods. And then that one was a 52-yarder kicked by Tim Horn, where Jimmy Lake iced him twice. And then the third time he cranked the music. And then he also had the defense, and then Race Porter's even like telling the defense to like crank it up a little bit too. They want to get this guy's under some real pressure, and he made the field goal, I think, by like a yard. I mean, it was close.
Yeah, low kick.
But here's the thing to think about. I'm wondering if they're thinking about Peyton Henry from 50 in and Tim Horn from 50 and out, or maybe even a guy like Jarrett North, because we haven't seen too much of North this year, the freshman walk-on kicker. But in the kicks that he has shown in practice from distance, he has easy power with that leg. He's shown he might have the strongest leg of all of them.
Yeah. And, you know, getting back to the quarterbacks, like I said, I just think that it's a lot closer than I anticipated. I thought that Dylan Morris would be the clear leader. I wouldn't say he's the clear leader, but I would definitely say he's the leader. Not by much.
He's the leader because he's the incumbent. He's the guy that knows the offense better than anyone. That being said, there's nothing that Patrick O'Brien has done this spring that would tell me he's not ready. I mean, if they needed Patrick O'Brien to come in and win a ball game for him, I think they'd be very comfortable with that.
He looks like it. He looks the part.
He looks the part, and he was the only quarterback that took his team to a touchdown today. He found Mark Redmond down the middle for about, I don't know, about 20, 25-yard play. It was great, too, because he was wide open. I mean, he was wide open. So he found him, did what he was supposed to do, and he continues to show that he can move the ball. Now, that being said, the one time he did get a chance to go with the ones today in the final team period, he dropped the snap twice, which were his drops. I mean, he was with Luke Wattenberg. Luke Wattenberg put the ball in the money, and he just dropped a ball. I don't know why. And the whole series kind of went south from there. I mean, he was able to make some yards on a scramble, but then he had to throw the ball deep on a fourth down. Terrell Bynum had a chance to make a play. It would have been a hard play, very hard play to make, but he had a chance. But that being said, overall, I would say that when O'Brien has been really effective, it's also been with the two receivers. And I know we'll get into that a little bit, but overall, Patrick O'Brien, I think, probably had slightly the better day than Dylan Morris.
Yeah, and, you know, those two just look so comfortable out there. You know, it's not like either one is pressing to try to impress, but I think they both look really good. So, you know, it's going to be interesting tomorrow. Are they scrimmaging tomorrow, Chris?
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see with the
– I mean, that's what Jimmy Lake said. He said at the last scrimmage on Saturday, he said, you guys need to come back out if you like some of this situational stuff. We're going to be doing a lot of situational stuff on Saturday. He laid it out. And so I suspect they're going to be, you know, if they're not doing a lot of two-minute drill again, they're going to still be doing a lot of coming out of the end zone, red zone work. They're going to probably, hopefully, try to mix in a lot of this different stuff. But if I'm, you know, if I'm going in as a Washington fan, I want to see how these quarterbacks are reacting in the 2 minute situation. I want to see how these receivers are reacting in this two minute situation. Are they making big plays? Are they coming up and doing what they're supposed to do? Or are they continuing to show a lot of inconsistency with drops, which they showed today as well?
Sam Heward continues to struggle. And, you know, it's just, I know some people, when they hear that kind of thing, it's, you know, automatic panic button. It's time to push the panic button. But you just got to understand, Sam was in high school 3 weeks ago, and he's doing a lot of adjustments. And did he have more interceptions, or did receivers drop more balls today for him?
It was both. But but the bottom line is, if Patrick O'Brien wasn't here, Kim, people would have every reason to be in full-blown panic. Because if it wasn't for Camden Sermon throwing a pick to Ben Hines, which it was a great pick, by the way. I mean, it was a big stretch over the middle, and Hines just came up and snagged it. Defense loved it. It was right in front of them. They love that kind of play. But if it wasn't for that, Sam Heward would have thrown all four interceptions today, and he threw them to four different guys. The first one was to Cameron Fabikalainen. The next one was to Carson Bruner. The next one after that was to Cooper McDonald. So Jimmy Lake now got his Cooper McDonald pick. And then the final one, which was really ironic, because the final one was basically the final team drive of the entire practice. Sam is moving the ball down the field. He completes a pass to Kamari Pleasant. He's getting the ball to Taj Davis on some plays. And then he gets it all the way down to the 13-yard line. And it's like third and three. He goes back to pass. Doesn't realize that Jeremiah Martin had gone on his own blitz and had dropped back out into coverage, and he picks him off. It was a great play, too, because Jeremiah Martin, the ball was thrown pretty hard. Jeremiah Martin gets one of his mitts on it, tips it up, and just comes down with it, falls down. The defense goes ballistic. They pick him up, and they just convoy him all the way into the end zone, and that was the practice. And it kind of really – it summed up Sam Heward's day in a nutshell.
Well, it just seemed like when Sam did make the right throw, did make the right read, and delivered the ball on target, guys weren't catching the ball.
Well,
and keep in mind, these are not top of the roster guys that were dropping the ball, except for Devin Culp, but he was getting drops by walk-ons and stuff like that.
Well, but he was also getting drops by guys like Racanelli, and that's disappointing a little bit. But the bottom line is, he was struggling a lot early with overthrows. And he had a couple plays that he knew were open and could have completed. I think he had one to Quentin Moore that would have been a nice completion. He was in space, he was open, and he overthrew him. And that, I think that was maybe right before the pick to Bruner.
Yes, the one where over the middle, it almost to me where it looked way overthrown.
Yeah,
that almost looked to me like somebody on the line of scrimmage got a fingertip and caused that thing to sail a little bit more.
Yeah, I know the one with the Camp Fab one was definitely a big overthrow too. But yeah, these are situations where you can already tell, and I mentioned this one of the first practices when they were on the East Field, where guys like O'Brien are taking Heward by the shoulder and just saying, you know, this is what we're doing. This is what you can already tell those guys are really trying to bring him along. And this is going to be one of those practices, Kim, where he's going to need a real, he's going to need some shoulders to lean on and to explain what's going on so that he fully understands. But, you know, the thing about it is, Kim, this is when you want him making these mistakes. This is when you want him, you know, trying to drink the water through the fire hose. You don't want it to be in the fall. You want him to be learning all this stuff now so that by the time he's in the middle of fall camp, you know, like this time, you know, 3-4 months from now, we're sitting here going, yeah, remember that day when he had four picks in spring? It's nice today. He's throwing four touchdowns, you know, or doing something nice, because we see it as the result or the accumulation of all of that knowledge that he soaked up, and all that film study has turned what we're now talking about as negatives, and he's turned those into positives.
Yeah, and, you know, for those listening who played football, just remember your freshman year and, you know, the first couple of times you went up against the seniors and stuff and just how overwhelming it could be. And Sam's just too talented and too bright of a kid to not get a lot better. So I think he'll get there. But when you make mistakes, that's what you learn from. And he's going to have a lot of film to take a look at, you know, not only, you know, during spring football, but all summer long. He's going to be able to look at these and correct those mistakes and see what he did
wrong. Well, and knowing Sam, he's going to be – he's probably already there. He's probably already watching the film. And they're, him and Donovan are already breaking it down and figuring out what he needed to look at or what he didn't see or what he didn't key off of. Like, again, like I said, that zone blitz, we've seen it many times where the outside linebackers, they may look like they're coming on a rush. They'll drop out, and maybe one of the inside guys goes on a blitz. Well, he clearly didn't read the key with Jeremiah Martin, and it's not often you see the a guy like him, 6'5", 265, you know, 5-10 yards down the field in pass coverage, but there he was. He popped up, and he made a heck of a play. It was really athletic play.
Yeah, the one thing about Sam, you know, in my dealing with him, that, you know, and talking to those surrounding him, I don't want to say he has OCD, but he sure seems to have some of those tendencies where he's not going to let go. I mean, he's just not going to let go of these mistakes. He's going to grind it. He's just going to not let go. He's like a dog with a bone, you know, trying to get better.
Oh, I guarantee you this will be a huge burr in his saddle. I mean, huge. But the thing about it, too, also, so when Jimmy Lake talked Wednesday about how this group is more talented and better now than they were this time last year, when you had Sermon and Garbers and some of these other guys, you know, I should say Jacob Sermon instead of Camden. I need to make sure I say that correctly. But, you know, when he says that, I think some of the part that's built into that is the fact that, you know, that Morris and O'Brien and Heward, they're all going to be organizing the OTA stuff. They're all going to be organizing the throwing sessions during the summer. You know they're all going to be doing this routes on air type stuff because there's so much that needs to be cleaned up and so much that they can look at on film based on today and days like this. And again, when you double up the reps, now all of a sudden you've got twice as much film you can pour over. It's just going to make them that much better in the classroom. All you can do now as a fan is hope that that translates to the field in the fall.
Where Sawyer Racanelli stood out a couple of days ago, I think the guy that's really starting to make a move is Taj Davis. Yeah. He's making plays out there.
Well, you mentioned Taj Davis, and then you didn't even realize that I had put a picture of Taj Davis in the practice report. He was the guy that stood out today of the receivers, and he stood out by quite a ways. I'd say the guy that, to me, had the second best day was Jalen Polk. I thought Polk had a really consistent day. You know, they clearly are creating these two groups. You know, the number one group right now is Terrell Bynum, Jalen McMillan, Rome Odunze, and the second group is Racanelli, Polk, and Taj Davis. And right now, that second group, I thought, had a much better day today than the first group. They just showed up. Taj Davis had like a 35-yard catch from O'Brien down the field. He had another one that was like 24, 25 yards. And on both of those plays, he took a nice pop. The first one, I couldn't tell if it was Smith or Elijah Jackson that did it. I think it may have been Jackson. And then the other one, it was Cam Williams who popped him out of bounds. He just popped right back up like, let's go. Because he knows when you're in situational ball like that, time's a-wasting. You don't have time to worry about, you know, oh, he shouldn't have hit me. We're in thud tempo or whatever. He got clocked and he got right up and did his thing. So I thought Taj Davis really showed himself today that he's back in the mix. He was a guy that I thought the first couple days of spring really showed up and then just leveled off, really. And I don't know if he was dealing with something, but these last couple practices, I think he showed up again. And him and Racanelli and Polk, I think, have made a really nice combination. And it's not coincidental that they happen to be, most of their work happens to be with Patrick O'Brien, who I think has had obviously a very stellar spring so far.
And the guy we kind of take for granted a little bit because he's been around so long, Terrell Bynum, is just steady. He's just
very steady. No, he's very steady. And, you know, of the three in the first group, he was the one that stood out. I mean, he had a chance to make some plays. He went out and made some plays, especially very, very early on in the first situational 2-minute drill. Him and Dylan Morris, They connected for a couple really nice gains. In fact, I think he may have had one that was 20-plus that got them in good field position. I think they ended up with a field goal. So, yeah, he's going to be what he is. You know, and I know that doesn't sound great, But they need that stability right now. They need that consistent presence. And right now, he's the one that's giving it to them. But the problem is, when you're at the receiver position, you need two, three, four of those guys. And right now, he's the only one that's consistently delivering. They need Odunze to step up. They need McMillan to step up. Taj Davis is now starting to step up. But they need Jalen Polk to start really getting more consistent, because I think he's all those guys have that in them.
I had a chance to talk to Durham Cato after practice, the tight ends coach, and some interesting things. You know, he's talking about, you know, they've got three different types of tight ends with three different responsibilities. And, you know, he's got one tight end on the roster that he feels can do all three of them really well, and that's Cade Otten.
Is that a surprise?
No. Yeah.
I mean, he is the Swiss Army knife. He is the Drew Sample. He is the guy that if you want him to block, he can block. If you want him to go out and on a route, he's going to go out on a route. And, you know, to be honest with you, if they wanted to line him up as a fullback and have him carry the ball, I'm sure he'd be happy to do that too. With no Jack Westover right now in terms of him being active in practice, they've had to rely on guys like Javon Forward and Caden Jumper and some of these other guys. And that's good because those guys need all the reps they can get. But if they needed a situation where it was a third and short in a live situation, would it surprise me if they lined up Cade Otten in the fullback position, whether to run it or to go on a route or whatever? Wouldn't shock me at all.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, I say it's not what people say, it's how they say it. And the one guy that I kind of read into, he's really excited about. He just seems he lit up a little bit when he was talking about Mark Redmond.
Oh, yeah. Well, Redmond was a guy that had a great day today. I mean, and again, it's just building up those days, stacking the days on top of each other. I think Jimmy always used to call it like building bricks, you know, or stacking bricks. You know, these guys need to keep stacking bricks. And, you know, for the young guys, they stack the brick and then all of a sudden they kind of, oh, wait, I forgot the mortar. I need to take that brick off so I can put this here. And then I got to come back and I can stack another brick. So there's always kind of the one step forward, two steps back. Sometimes with the younger kids, they need to get in the habit of showing up consistently for practice every day. But, you know, Mark Redmond would be the first to tell you, all I do is watch Cade Otten to know what I need to do. And that all I need to do is make sure I emulate how he attacks practice and how he approaches everything that he's doing in all the periods that we're involved in. And I will be just fine. And that's the nice thing about it, you know, because Otten learned from Sample and guys like Hunter Bryant. And so now these guys are going to learn from Otten. And when they get to his position, then the younger guys are going to learn from those guys. It's how it's perpetuating. And it's the development part of this whole thing, Kim, that is the reason why Washington is on a successful track right now.
Also had a chance to talk with Terrence Brown, the defensive backs coach, and I asked him how good Trent McDuffie was, and he kind of laughed and said, I think we all know the answer to that. But, you know, he pretty much said that, you know, Trent, they know what they're going to get out of Trent. They know he's one of the premier defensive backs in the country, so they're trying to get the other younger guys more reps, and Trent's acting more as that big brother and getting, you know, a lot of information to the younger guys. But, yeah, we just haven't noticed a lot of Trent McDuffie this camp.
No, you wouldn't. I mean,
they're just not throwing his way when he is out there.
It's the same as Byron Murphy a few years back. There's absolutely no need. There's absolutely no need to do anything to get him in a situation where, you know, something might happen. We've seen it with Zion. And so, if there's one or two guys that you could put cotton wool around and just not worry too much about spring, he's one of them. With the fact that they've gone live means the running backs are getting a lot more live reps. But typically, it'd be the running backs that you just pretty much put in the bubble wrap and not worry too much about. But if there's one guy that it does feel like they're kind of actually going out of their way a little bit to protect, Trent McDuffie seems to be that guy.
Yeah, it's just kind of, yeah, he's good.
Yeah.
He's good.
And is anybody going to say no?
No. 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 They got him back there returning punts too, which is pretty exciting because
excuse me.
He's pretty dynamic back there.
Absolutely. No, him and Kyler Gordon are really good players back there. And they've got some of their safety punters or safety catchers, guys like Davis, McMillan, some of those other guys too, but it'll be interesting to see how they approach it. But I think Trent McDuffie is certainly the number one returner, punt returner.
Anything we haven't covered?
No, just that I encourage the fans, if you haven't gone out and gotten tickets for Saturday's scrimmage, go out and do it, especially if you enjoy that 2 minute stuff, because I think, again, to repeat myself, the 2 minute stuff I think is when the competition just gets raised a notch or two, and these guys really get after it. So that's what I'd watch.
Rain gear. Bring your rain gear. So, last minute thoughts, just overall.
No, that's it. I mean, I just, like I said, I think it was a lot of good situational work, but it was all 2 minute drill today, and I just posted it on the practice report today. So take a look at that, and hopefully we'll see a lot of people out here tomorrow. And we live in Seattle. Rain's no big deal.
Yeah. Keep your eye on the basketball board. There could be some stuff popping on that here pretty quick, hopefully within the next couple of days. Could be a week, but we'll see what happens on the basketball front. But keep an eye on that. Four more scholarships yet to fill and an assistant coaching position yet to fill. So just a reminder, if you're looking for those daily updates as well as those breaking news alerts, send us a note, huskystadium@gmail.com, subject line newsletter. We will get you hooked up. For all of us at dogman.com, I'm Kim Grenolds along with Chris Fetters. Go Dogs.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.